Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies. You can study a variety of topics such as creative writing, human rights, and the arts. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Are monogamous relationships as good for couples as we think? Over the course of a committed relationship, research suggests that anywhere between 25 and 70% of partners will stray at least once, despite the fact that societal norms strongly encourage couples to remain faithful to one another, and the majority of cheating partners say they don't want their primary relationships to end. So where is the disconnect, and is it possible that sexual fidelity is not absolutely necessary or even good for every enduring relationship? Joining us to discuss this is Eric Anderson. He's a sociologist at the University of Westchester and author of the new book, The Monogamy Gap: Men, Love, and the Reality of Cheating. Eric, welcome to Think.
Well, thank you very much, Chris. It's a pleasure to be here. And let me begin by correcting my institution affiliation there. I'm a professor at the University of Winchester.
Winchester, forgive me. I am so sorry.
And that is in England. So although I'm American, I'm actually in England right now.
All right. Thank you so much for the correction. I appreciate it.
Pleasure.
I want to start with this. Why are the figures with regard to how many people cheat so hard to pin down exactly? A 25 to 70% is a big gap.
Well, there's several difficulties here. The first is defining what a cheating behavior is. Much of the literature has asked about affairs in the past. Have you ever had an affair on your married partner? And an affair has a totally different concept than just cheating on one's partner. But another reason is they're often uncertain about what it means to cheat. What does, you know, is it cheating if one kisses? Is it cheating if one has oral sex, et cetera? And another reason is when you ask the person if they've ever cheated on their partner, if you ask, you know, if you ask a young couple, they're less likely to have cheated than if you ask an older couple. But at the same time, an older couple is less likely to admit that they've cheated than somebody in a younger couple. So there's a lot of different interesting factors at play here that make it very difficult. But above all, it's stigma. How do you get people to admit to a stigmatized behavior? That, above all, is what makes it difficult to accurately assess cheating rates.
What do you do as a sociologist to make people comfortable enough to tell you the truth?
Well, I think the reality is most sociologists on this topic have done large-scale quantitative research, and they're hoping that the anonymity of the survey will provide some honesty. I don't think that necessarily is a very fruitful method. So what I do is in-depth interviews, and I do this about the relationships in general. And I ask them to tell me about the relationships, and I listen to their stories about how they got into relationships. And then I start to ask them if they've ever done something that, you know, maybe would upset their partner. And I just sort of gently get to it. But the other thing that I do is I come out to them as gay in my narrative. And what that does is that is disclosing something personal about myself, and that enables them to feel closer to me and to disclose something personal about their self. And so what I hope to do is just sort of engender, you know, the kind of conversation that you might have with a taxi cab driver or a bartender, somebody who's anonymous to you, so that they feel a sense of safety in telling me about their cheating.
So for purposes of your research, you define cheating as what the cheated on partner would define as cheating, as opposed to what the narratives that people tell themselves.
Yes, indeed, and that's my novel way of doing it. In order to avoid complications of, well, what does it actually mean to cheat, I just simply asked, have you ever done anything that would upset your partner sexually? You know? And if the answer was yes, well, then, you know, that counts as cheating. But the moment I did that, it opened up a whole new can of worms. And that is that we no longer have just physical cheating to be concerned with. Now there's a myriad of ways in which one can cheat on the internet. One can be masturbating to pornography, but one can also be masturbating to live pornography, where you've paid in points or tokens somebody to do something on camera for you. One can be having cyber sex, one can be texting, one can be masturbating while just talking to somebody without their knowledge that you're doing such. So this opens up all kinds of questions about what does it mean to be faithful in the digital age.
You write about the fact that monogamy is held up as a moral ideal, despite the fact that we so clearly fail to stick to it in a lot of committed relationships. Why do we find it so hard to practice what we preach? And is it, in fact, harder in 2012 than it was in 1912?
And that is probably the key question. Monogamy has always been a difficult institution to obtain. You know, we know that from the very first large-scale survey of those in the United States, even in a very culturally conservative time, like the late 1940s and early 1950s, Kinsey was able to show that about 50% of men had cheated on their married wives and about 25% of women had cheated on their married husbands. And this was in an age in which it was harder to cheat than it is today. So monogamy has always been difficult to obtain. And what I do in my book, The Monogamy Gap, is I assess the literature in the field. I look at the psychological literature, the biological literature, the endocrinological literature, the anthropological literature, and even the evolutionary psychology literature. And lo and behold, all academics from all walks of life, we're all saying the same thing. We're saying that monogamy doesn't come easy. It has to be forced upon us by cultural convention. It's not something that men freely choose, and not something necessarily that women freely choose either, although I've looked at men in my research. But this is a much more complicated formula for today's youth. And that's why in my book I focus mostly on university undergraduate men. And it's because these men have grown up in this digital age. These men have grown up in an age in which we no longer find masturbation taboo. We no longer find premarital sex taboo. We no longer find recreational sex taboo. We no longer find oral sex taboo. We no longer find pornography taboo. So all of these cultural stigmas around all of these things have decreased, meaning that young men today, they begin consuming pornography around age 11. They begin having sex at age 14, 15, or 16. And by the time they get into monogamous relationships, they've had everything spelled out to them in sex. By the time they're 18 years old, they know everything and have done most. And what this means is that for a long-term couple, they no longer have the opportunity to discover sex themselves. Their sex lives are revealed to them on the internet, whereas old couples would say, you know, the older generation would say that they feel that they invented sex, that they discovered things in bed and, you know, and it sort of came, oh, you can't do that. Well, you know, it sort of came to them naturally. And so all of this means that today's youth are habituated to sex at a much more rapid rate than older generations are, and that makes monogamy even more challenging for this generation.
So we definitely, are you saying, should not extrapolate this research necessarily from university age men to all men, as, given that men are marrying at later ages these days, and many of them are not, you know, at 18 to 22 are not necessarily in a place where they're considering committing to a life partner.
The very fact that we asked that question about whether 18 to 22 year old men are expected to cheat is indicative of just how much monogamy has failed. That we, and almost every journalist I talk to says this, well, how can you extrapolate from, you know, 20-year-old men to adults? So are we saying that 20-year-olds who've been in a relationship for months or years are expected to cheat? And that just gives you a little bit of an insight as to how far monogamy has failed us. And so I would say this, that I look to interview undergraduate men specifically because they live in what I call a rich sexual marketplace. They have a greater opportunity to cheat. It's more available to them. I look to team sport athletes because they have higher sexual capital. But one thing we know about men in general is that the men who don't cheat, it tends to be because of lack of opportunity. They no longer live in a rich sexual marketplace. They've lost their sexual capital. So just because men don't cheat doesn't mean that men don't want to cheat. It is harder for married men to cheat. They have, you know, they have children, they have increased surveillance of their partners, and it does make it harder for them to cheat. So young men probably cheat more often. But if one looks at the website, ashleymadison.com, there are 12 million members who are looking to have an affair, 40% of which are women. Now, this is not indicative of a culture that is happy with monogamy. Clearly, this says that monogamy for all generations, for all generations, is something that exists in ideal only.
So, Eric, what are the motivations that people have to cheat? And some of this may seem very obvious, but it's worth having you sort of explain.
Well, thank you. I can't tell you how much I appreciate the opportunity to explain my findings, you know, in a slower, longer period of time than 4 minutes, because it's a lot to get in.
Yeah.
And it's because these men, they have grown up in a culture that highly values monogamy and that stigmatizes, that greatly stigmatizes those who cheat. So whereas many of my my detractors might say, well, you know, they're 20-year-olds, of course they're expected to cheat, that's not what they say. They say that if they cheat on their partners, they are met with a great deal of stigma. They'll lose friendships over it. They'll certainly lose their partner over it. They certainly don't want their parents to find out about it because it brings such great stigma. Nobody likes a cheater. So these men have grown up in this culture in which there's high stigma for cheating, and they don't want to cheat. And this is what's fascinating about it. When they enter into the relationships, they believe that monogamy will be fulfilling for them. They believe that their hot young partner is going to give them sexual excitement forever in their relationships. They can't possibly see themselves cheating. And indeed, the men who were in couples for a very short period of time, just a few months, told me, oh, I would never cheat. I would never do that to her. They've come from broken families. Their parents have cheated, and they've seen that break up the family. And I say, I don't want to be that guy. But something happens within those few months. And by 6 months, men begin to cheat. By 2 years, they most certainly have cheated. And what happens is they get sexually habituated to the sex that they're having in the relationship. And they do things to spice it up because there's some really harsh narratives out there that are really women-blaming, victim-blaming narratives. And the narrative is you know, that a man won't cheat on his girlfriend if, you know, or his boyfriend, if his girlfriend just gives him enough sex and, you know, puts enough effort into the sex life to spice it up. So these men find that they begin having sex in their relationships, they get habituated to that sex, they do things to spice it up, but at the end of the day, they still want sex with somebody else. And here's what's unique. The longer they're with their partner, the more they love their partner. But the longer they're with their partner, the more they want sex with somebody else. So these two desires go in opposite directions. So they get to a point where they're strongly somatically desiring sex with somebody else. Their bodies are urging and craving for sex with somebody else. When they're masturbating to pornography, it's not their partners they're thinking of. But emotionally, they don't want to cheat. And so this is the arena that I call the monogamy gap. For the first time, their biological desires don't line up with their emotionally, socially constructed desires. And so in this monogamy gap, a great deal of frustration and tension emerges. Sometimes they get angry at their girlfriends. Perhaps they're looking for a reason to cheat. Other times, they just get drunk. They get drunk, a little flirtation happens, a touch, a kiss, or something, and it quickly escalates because basically they say, well, I just kissed her. What's the difference between kissing her and making out with her? If I'm caught, either way, I'm in trouble. I've made out with her. What's the difference between making out with her and touching her breast? That sort of thing. It escalates rather quickly till they end up having sex. They feel a great deal of guilt about having the sex, but then they rectify that guilt by cheating again. And the more they cheat, the less guilt they have. So eventually, these men find themselves as permanent cheaters, going to great measures to cover up their cheating and really hoping that their partners don't find out about their cheating.
Eric Anderson is my guest. He's a sociologist at the University of Winchester and author of the new book, The Monogamy Gap, Men, Love, and the Reality of Cheating. If you'd like to join the conversation, we have lines open at 1-800-933-5372. You can also send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is sociologist Eric Anderson. He teaches at the University of Winchester and is author of the new book, The Monogamy Gap, Men, Love, and the Reality of Cheating. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org. Eric, I was interested in this, that at the same time you talked to these young men and they were talking about their rates of cheating, they were almost universally not okay with the idea of their partner, whether that was a young man or a young woman, cheating at the same time.
Yes, indeed. And I'm just going to get out there real quick before I answer that. If listeners are interested in the book, I've got a 30% coupon code for them. If they go to Oxford University Press and they put in the numbers 30626, they can get 30% off the book, which is good because it's a hardback-only book, and that makes it more expensive. So again, that's promo code 30626. But the reason that these men are, these men find that cheating works well for them. Most of them are cheating. I found that 78% of the men had cheated on their current partner. And that's not to say that 78% had ever cheated, but that's to say that 78% had cheated on their current partner, and that doesn't include cyber cheating. If one includes digital cheating, that number would probably be very close to 100%. So I say to these men, you clearly want sex with somebody else while valuing the long-term emotional stability that you have with your partner. There is a form of relationship that permits this. It's called an open sexual relationship, i.e. Newt Gingrich's attempt. And I say, so why don't you just ask your girlfriend or your boyfriend, why don't you just ask them if you can be in an open sexual relationship? And most of the men answer, well, you don't know women very well, do you? They say, if I tell my partner that I want sex with somebody else, she's going to slap me and then break up with me. And that doesn't get me my goal. So cheating becomes a rational response to the irrational situation of monogamy. Cheating becomes a reasonable solution to them. It makes sense. It's the only way that they can get their sex without being broken up with. But also, it's a way that they can get their sex and not permit their partners to do the same. And this is because monogamy has built within to it very strong jealousy scripts. It's essentially built off of sexual jealousy. And all we have to do is ask ourselves to prove this. So if you ask any couple, you say, what's more important in your relationship, the emotional connection or the sexual connection? They'll say, of course, the emotional connection. But then which do you police? If your partner tells a secret to somebody they haven't told you, do you divorce them? Do you feel violated? No. All girls have another girlfriend that they talk to things about they don't tell their boyfriends. But if they cheat on you, we're socialized to feel that we've been completely and totally victimized. If we find out that our partners are having sex with someone else, we're socialized to be very guilty, very jealous about that. So again, cheating may not be nice, but cheating has the mechanism of getting them their sex and not having to go through the jealousy of knowing that their partners are also having recreational sex with somebody else.
What convinces you, Eric, that it's just that people who have been cheated on have been socialized to be upset about this, that were they raised in a vacuum, they wouldn't be bothered by their partner's sexual infidelity?
Well, yes, and all we have to do is look cross-culturally to know this, or even within our own culture to those in open relationships. First is cross-culturally. For example, in the Islamic faith, men can have four wives. This is part of their culture. It's accepted. In France, men are certainly expected to maintain mistresses if they're of a certain socioeconomic status. But even looking into the U.S. culture, those in open sexual relationships, they say that they wither at jealousy scripts, that they no longer feel jealous about their partner having sex with somebody else. In fact, often those in open sexual relationships, they begin by having threesomes instead of twosomes. And so what happens is they lose their jealousy of the idea of their partner having sex with somebody else. They begin to say, if my partner wants sex with that really hot guy, and my partner gets sex with that really hot guy, that will make my partner happy. And if that makes my partner happy, that makes me happy. They begin to look at it through that lens, and it decreases jealousy. And couples in open relationships will tell you that they lose their jealousy over sexual acts.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. My guest this hour is Eric Anderson, author of The Monogamy Gap, Men, Love, and the Reality of Cheating. Let's go on the phones now to Adriana in Dallas. Hi, Adriana.
Hello.
Hi, go right ahead.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just would like to ask Mr. Anderson this. It's kind of a comment, but it could be turned into a question.
Okay.
Is that all this time I've been listening and you are talking specifically about just having sex with people and cheating and all that. I understand, but what I wanted to say is that because we live in a society that has lost the basic values, and I can give you a perfect example of what I mean. What about if the couple loses, you know, respect and for each other? That's a basic, that's something that once you start a relationship with someone, it has to be based upon the basics, respect. When that is lost, then you look, I'm sorry because I am from Mexico, so I'm trying to translate here. But what I'm trying to tell you is that I have saw an ad line the other day, a couple that were going to get married, but in 3 months before they got married, the boyfriend got extremely sick. He entered into a coma. But she continued faithful to him. He was in a coma for 1.5 years. And even the doctors told her, you know, it's not going to be possible that he recovers. Probably he will die. So you should move on and live your life. She was pretty and young.
Right, okay. I think we can move. I got what the caller is saying. The caller is basically trying to equate sexual fidelity with love.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly. But that doesn't mean that one has to have sexual fidelity to have love. One doesn't have to disrespect their partner by having sex with other people, particularly if two people are open and honest and they say, yes, we would like sex outside of our relationship. We would take joy in doing that. Then there's no disrespecting one's partner there. Now, the men that I study, is this to disrespect the people that they've cheated on? Well, of course it is, but it's rational to them. It works for them. And what I'm looking to do in my book is not justify cheating, but it is to instead take a critical look and ask ourselves, does monogamy work? Is monogamy working for us? And with the incredibly high rates of cheating, with 12 million members on AshleyMadison.com looking for an affair, the answer is clearly no. Monogamy is not a good fit for human beings. We have to squash it upon us. And when we are forced to take monogamy, doesn't that take the joy out of monogamy? If one believes that there's some higher sacrifice for, you know, not having sex with somebody else, then shouldn't that sacrifice come from the heart and not from being forced to do it by society? Because what these men say is there is no other choice. They don't even generally know what the word monogamy means. For them, it's just the absolute cultural expectation that the moment they enter into an emotional/sexual relationship, they can no longer have sex with somebody else. There's no choice involved.
I was interested that a lot of young men told you that this wasn't about not loving their partner, that if they didn't love their partner, they would leave their partner.
Indeed, and that's exactly what they say to me. You know, I say, well, people will say that you're cheating on your partner. That means you don't love your partner. That's a very common script, and unfortunately, it's that script that breaks families up. It's the belief that you cheated on me, you have ultimately violated me, I must therefore leave you, despite having children in a relationship, that breaks families up. And then in that aspect, I ask, does that serve us well? Does that monogamous expectation serve the American family well when couples are broken up simply because one has had sex outside the relationship? Aren't there more important linchpins like the emotional relationship that one has as opposed to just the sexual? But so when I ask these men, you know, people will say that you don't love your partner. They basically say, look, Professor Anderson, if I didn't love my girlfriend, I would leave her. I'm young. I don't have a mortgage together. We don't have kids together. There's plenty of other hot girls out there I can go for. But I do love her. That's why I stay with her. I just want sex with somebody else. And I'm reminded, I mean, I try not to use just a anecdotal story, but one that I heard on a radio program I did a few weeks ago, a guy called in and said, I cheated on my wife for sex, but I absolutely loved her, but she couldn't permit me to stay in the relationship because of that. I lost my house, I lost my family, I lost everything, and to this day, I still love her dearly. It wasn't about a failure to love. It was simply about strong sexual desires.
So should we blame the partner who was cheated on that doesn't find that tolerable for the end of a relationship?
Well, I think what we need to do is we need to first blame society for only valuing one form of relationship and stigmatizing those in open sexual relationships or polyamorous relationships or any other form of relationship by believing that there is only one exalted form of relationship. Then we thrust that belief upon everybody unwillingly. And so the real fault I take aim with is the fact that we don't equally value other forms of loving, other forms of having sex. And if we did, then people would be more free to make a choice. They might start off in a monogamous relationship and then blur into an open relationship and then go back to a monogamous relationship. We would have more freedom to make these choices. But our culture currently, and this is new, this isn't something that humanity has always dealt with, and undoubtedly somebody's going to call in and say that monogamy is the foundation of marriage, and that's not the truth in any Abrahamic language, I'm sorry, any Abrahamic religion. In fact, even in Africa today, there are Christian countries where men can marry four wives. So what we need is an opening up of our cultural space, just like we've done with all these other sexual taboos, to allow people to be honest, to say, I would like to be in a sexually open relationship. But there isn't that permission yet. And until there is that permission, everybody's going to try to do monogamy, whether they're built for it or like it or not.
Is it reasonable to ask, Eric, that people who would desire relationships like this get that out there at the very beginning rather than sort of springing it on a partner they've been with for some time?
It would be nice, but the problem is, again, they don't know that they won't be happy with monogamy. They believe they'll be happy with monogamy at the beginning of a relationship. And so this creeps up on them, this strong desire to have sex with somebody else. So you can't just enter into the relationship and say, well, I think that I might want to be in an open relationship, because initially they don't want to be. They're very pleased with the amount of sex and the veracity of the sex that they're having. This comes later. So I'm hoping that my message that, hey, sexual habituation sets in relationships. It's coming. We know this from surveys of couples of all ages, that the one thing you can count on in an emotional relationship is that the longer you're together, the less sex you're going to have and the less exciting that sex is going to be.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phones next to Mark in Dallas. Hello, Mark.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think what we're talking about here is emotional monogamy. I think the word monogamy sets people up for failure. My family went through a divorce when I was young because of, infidelity, and nothing else was taken into consideration on my father, how good of a provider he was. That was the one thing that counted more than anything else he ever did.
Thank you. That is precisely my point, is that one can be a fantastic father all their life. They can provide, they can be caring and loving, they can be an absolutely amazing, wonderful partner. But one instance of infidelity and breakup occurs. And this is because the one who was cheated on is socially expected to dump them. In Britain the other day, there was a couple. They've been together for something like 70 years. The 90-year-old woman found out that her husband cheated on her before they were married, and she broke up with him after 70 years of marriage. That is just ridiculous. So my message to men and women throughout the world would be, don't break up with your partner because they've had sex with somebody else. Break up with your partner if the emotional love is gone, if the relationship is gone. Sex should not be the bellwether of an emotional relationship. And so your caller is exactly right. We need to value emotional monogamy more than sexual monogamy.
I want to go back to this idea that sort of what's good for the goose may or may not be good for the gander. And I realize that in some cases you're dealing with relationships between two young men. But in cases where you're talking about a heterosexual relationship, it would appear based on your research and other things that you've amalgamated into your data that men are more interested, although not exclusively, more interested in these extra dyadic sexual relationships than young women are. I mean, is the problem here that we're not on an equal playing field? If women are not as interested in relationships outside the relationship, sexual relationships, there's sort of no quid pro quo.
Wow, aren't you a fantastic interviewer? You have really done your homework. Yes, this is exactly what we show. We show that in studies all throughout the world, throughout cross-cultural studies, that men desire sex with more partners than women by a very large degree. In fact, if you look, for example, in San Francisco, gay part of San Francisco, where they've thrown off these sexual conventions, and you look at gay men and you look at lesbians, gay men will have hundreds or thousands of sexual partners, and lesbians will have dozens of sexual partners. So there's a huge disparity between men and women in desiring extra dyadic sex. There may be individual variants. You might get a caller or two saying, well, I'm a woman and I strongly desire sex with other people as well. But overall, men seem to desire sex at a much larger on a much larger scale than do women. And so, this opens up questions about whether, how would a couple negotiate this if they're in an open sexual relationship? Does the man, is it one for one or, and that would be up to the individual couple to determine. But yes, it is one aspect that makes it harder for heterosexuals to do this. It is much easier for same-sex couples to open up a relationship sexually. Well, for the fact that they can begin with a threesome, and how can one be jealous if both are in doing the same thing at the same time with the same person? So it does make it harder for heterosexual couples to negotiate non-monogamies.
We have an email here from Albert, who writes he's a graduate student in social work. Albert says, you say that monogamy has failed us. How do you make the jump from because monogamy has failed us to monogamy is no longer worth pursuing? There are several other moral attributes that are difficult to attain, but we don't dismiss those other attributes. And actually, what I'm going to do here is we need to take a quick pause, Eric, for a station break so you can answer that when we come back. My guest this hour is Eric Anderson. He is a sociologist at the University of Winchester and author of the new book, The Monogamy Gap, Men, Love, and the Reality of Cheating. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Eric Anderson, sociologist at the University of Winchester and author of the book The Monogamy Gap, Men, Love, and the Reality of Cheating. Our telephone number is 1-800-933-5372. Email address is think@kera.org. That's where we heard before the break from Albert, who wanted to know how you made this jump from monogamy has failed us to monogamy is no longer worth pursuing.
Well, that's kind of an unclear question. I mean, the question is, has monogamy failed us? And the answer is very much so yes. So then why do we continue to try to stick with a system that isn't working? And, this is particularly difficult because 50% of American families are in divorce, and psychologists will tell you that almost nobody gets divorced without cheating having happened first. So the argument is why should we stick with a system that's creating divorce? That if one truly values the American family structure, why not look to a more moral system of being able to be honest with one's partners about their sexual desires and being able to explore those from time to time in a safe environment, as opposed to the immorality of continuously lying to one's partner, pretending that they're not sexually interested in other people. So The reason we don't, however, is because men say to me, they say, Eric, I would prefer to be in a dishonest monogamous relationship than in a open and honest open relationship. And what that tells you, very much so like gay men in the closet who say, I would prefer to live a dishonest life and marry a woman and pretend that I'm straight than to come out of a closet. What that tells you is that there's a great deal of cultural stigma towards those in open relationships. So again, the way we're going to solve this is not by moralizing against people who cheat, but by critically looking at monogamy and saying, why is it couples can't be in open sexual relationships without stigma?
So what about the people outside those couples who are the cheating partner of the cheating partner? Do those individuals have no right to expect their relationships to have more to them than sexuality?
Most of the relationships that the men had were not relationships in any capacity. The men who cheat, they're not looking for emotional relationships with someone else unless they're actively looking to break up. Unless, if they're near the end of the relationship anyhow, they might cheat on somebody and then break up with their partner, yes. But for most of the men, they're very pleased with their partners. That's not the problem. The problem is they just want sex with somebody else. So when they search for that sex with somebody else, ultimately, the ideal hookup is somebody who has no contacts to the social networks, no emotional investment in them, so they can have the sex, not be found out about it, and not have an emotional attachment to it, no baggage whatsoever. And this very much so sits with the hookup culture that youth are in. It's a culture that I think has many positives, too. I want the audience to be very clear. I'm not blaming pornography. I think pornography is a very good thing, particularly the democratization of pornography. I think that the loss of sexual stigmas for today's youth is a fantastic thing. We just have one more sexual stigma that we need to erode at, and that is that open relationships are immoral. They're not. They're a more honest form of relationship than monogamy.
You equated this sort of no-strings-attached sex to the hookup culture. It sounds like it could also be equated to prostitution.
Well, if you ask me personally, I have absolutely no problems with prostitution in any capacity whatsoever. If people are forced to do it through economic depravity, that, of course, is a different story. I don't talk about prostitution in my book, but if men or women desire to seek and pay for sex, I don't see why our culture has a hang-up with that. We pay for all kinds of services. We pay for massages, which are erotic and feel very good. We pay for erotic movies. We pay for a fancy date with our partners and to get the oxytocin going. We often even pay for hot tubs. So I don't particularly have a problem with people paying for sexual services in any capacity, but that is aside from my book. My book has nothing to do with that in any capacity.
Let's go back to the phones. 1-800-933-5372 is our number. We'll speak next with John in Fort Worth. Hi, John.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm trying to articulate this as functionally as I can. I'm curious if he has an opinion of whether or not he's saying that there's no emotional attachment to sex, and I understand that he's emphasized the importance of marriages and keeping family together. I myself have been married for 12 years, been faithful, never cheated. I would make the point that I think anybody that's over the age of 35 would probably say that sex becomes less and less of an issue as you go, but that's a side note.
That's very true, John. That's absolutely very true.
But I just, like you said, the emotional attachment, and I go back to, and the only way that I can think to articulate it is that old Bible verse that, evil company corrupts good manners, meaning that, you know, the familiarization, me being around other females, I mean, there's somebody that I might bond with more than my wife, damaging that emotional connection that's kept us together for 12 years. So I just...
What do you think, Eric?
Well, I mean, I didn't quite catch the whole Bible verse part, but he brings up a very important point. I'm not sure this is exactly where he was going with or not. But what is more threatening to a relationship is not sexual attraction to somebody else. It's emotional attraction to somebody else. It's viewing somebody else as providing us with more emotional goodies than our primary partner. And the number one place that affairs have, when affairs are more of a danger to a relationship, because remember, the men, when they cheat, they're just looking for sex. When they have an affair, they're looking for emotional attachment. The number one place where affairs occur are in today's modern sex-integrated workplaces. This is where affairs occur. So if we really want to protect the modern family, then what we really are saying is we should sex-segregate the workspace. Now, I'm not willing to go that far, am I? I mean, that's a preposterous disposition. But cheating is not what is threatening the family. And that's the message that I'm trying to bring.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Next on the line, we speak with Laura in Vinton. Hi, Laura.
Hi. I had a question, and I think y'all may have touched on it a bit, but I wondered if in the research you looked at the fact that sex, particularly good sex, leads to a release of oxytocin, which leads to emotional bonding, and therefore a man might accidentally have an emotional relationship when he was intending to have sex.
Very good. Thank you very much. Yes, I do. I bring in all of the research from multiple disciplines on sex, and that includes research on the production of oxytocin and its use in bonding and its use in feeling good. And there is a release of oxytocin when one has sex, but there's also a release of oxytocin when one cuddles with their dog or takes a hot tub or goes for a romantic walk even. But what's interesting about sex with the same person is endocrinologists are now showing that in time, we actually develop something of a repulsion towards sex with our same partner, that the oxytocin doesn't get released. It becomes just the opposite. And this reminds me of the old joke that resonates so well that, you know, if you put a penny in a jar every time you have sex before marriage, you'll have enough pennies in the jar to last the rest of your marriage after you've been married. Or, you know, the woman who's looking at the ceiling while having sex thinking, I'll paint it brown. And it's just that we lose that hormonal veracity to sex with our partners. And men particularly miss that.
We have an email here from Laura in Richardson who says, so few animals in nature mate for life. Do you think that humans are just not animals that mate for life?
Well, another very good question. And again, in my book, The Monogamy Gap, and I'm going to give out the promotion code again.
No, you know, we've got it, and people can get to the podcast. Yes.
Well, we know that very few animals are monogamous in the animal world. There's some evidence that shows that human beings are both monogamous and non-monogamous at the same time. And so what I argue is that we're really in sort of a biological monogamy gap. We're really torn in some capacity in two ways. And it depends on how long you've been with your partner and whatnot. But yes, human beings were certainly not designed to be monogamous. If you look at what makes other animals non-monogamous, we fit that pattern. But there's also some evidence that suggests that some human beings are designed to be monogamous. And this might explain why some men, and about 22% of the men in my book, say that they're very happy with monogamy, that it works for them, that they don't need that much sex with somebody else. And some men will come on and say, you know, I've been married for 12 years and I'm happy with the sex with my partner, or I'm happy not having that much sex. So I think it's very fair to say there's great variety in human beings. Again, the problem is we have a one-size-fits-all culture to our relationships, and that is monogamy only.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next on the phones to Josh in Richardson. Hello, Josh.
Hi. I'm going to use my inside voice, and I'm going to say that I disagree with just about, respectfully, everything that Mr. Anderson has said, except for that prostitution should be legalized. It should. They could tax it then. Want to make a few really quick points. Number one, what Mr. Anderson seems to be promoting is the abdication of personal responsibility, which is not only, I think, a factor in why so many people cheat at this point, but why so many other things in society do not work either.
We can stop him there, can't we? I'm not promoting an abdication of personal responsibility. I mean, if he has a serious question about the research, let's take it.
All right, let's be as respectful of Josh as he's being of you. Josh, make your second point, and then we'll get a response for you.
I will make my second point. I respect what Mr. Anderson has been saying. I just disagree with it. My second point is I've been listening to the program, I don't believe that anywhere have I heard Mr. Anderson use the phrase or talk about the phrase, which is what prevents cheating, the marriage contract or a relationship contract, which is what people are supposed to honor when they're in a supposedly monogamous relationship.
Well, this is exactly the problem. This is exactly what I'm spelling out, is that there's no opportunity to say that they can have a contractual relationship that doesn't have monogamy as part of it. There's no social opportunity to do that. That they're expected to be in the type of contract that Josh spells out, whether they like it or not. And often, unbeknownst to them, that they won't like it eventually. This is precisely the problem. Monogamy is hoisted and forced upon us. So, Josh, you can't be angry at somebody who's forced into a contract against their will. There's no other viable options. The other option is don't marry, don't have a partner, don't have a lover, don't raise a family. Is that what we really want? People not getting married, making children in sexual hookups, but not getting married? Is that what we really want? So that is precisely the problem that I point out in my book. Monogamy is forced upon us all.
Well, you are arguing that really, and we're assuming here, and I know I'm grossly generalizing, but we're talking about men being unfaithful to their partners. We're assuming that men get to have it both ways and women get to have it one way.
And in the book, I'm very clear to say that, again, what I'm predominantly trying to do is explain why things are the way they are. But I'm very clear to say that when I talk about opening up relationships to sexually open relationships, that we should have equality of the sexes here, that women should have the same opportunities as men. And no way is this to give men a pass and not women. And neither is this to villainize men for their cheating and not women. Because in your opening statement, you talked about rates of cheating. Well, the Hyde Report in the United Kingdom shows that while 72% of married men have cheated on their partners, 70% of married women have cheated on their partners. So this isn't to villainize one sex or the other, or to give one sex a pass over the other or not. This is to say that for both genders, that we need to take a critical look at monogamy and its functioning in our society.
Eric, if we could believe the statistics, this is so common. Why do you think it's so incredibly difficult, if not to say painful, for people to talk about?
About being cheated on, or about
about the issue of monogamy versus multiple partners?
Yeah, very good, Chris. And Chris, I appreciate that. What it is that we're taught that if we desire sex with somebody other than our partner, that it's a sign that we don't love our partners. There's a myth out there, and the myth says, if you truly love your partner, you wouldn't want sex with somebody else. And if you do, you just haven't found the right partner. That myth makes it virtually impossible for couples to talk about their sexual desires for other people, or to really talk about their sexual desires for other people. Because it's viewed as being an assault to the love that one has in a relationship.
Did you find, you mentioned having these interviews with college-age students. Once you got them started, were they excited to have someone that they could speak openly to about this?
Yes, and that's because, most of them weren't running around telling their friends that they were cheating on their girlfriends.
They were
worried about the stigma.
Mm-hmm.
So they kept it quiet. It was very much like a confessional, like, wow, God, I'm really glad I can talk to somebody about this and not have it get back to hurt me. And it just goes to show, and the research shows that young men of this age, they are emotionally capable of committing to long-term relationships, that they're cognitively in the same place as older men. And in fact, if they weren't, that would be saying a disservice to, for example, Mormons who marry at very young ages. So 18-year-olds are very capable of having long-term emotional relationships. And they're not as capable of having those long-term emotional monogamous relationships, however. So, yeah, when they have the opportunity to actually talk about their cheating, it feels good to them. They can vent it out. And it often turns into sort of a therapy session with them. Because, a number of these men to meet Chris, they would say, I'd like to think that when I find that perfect woman, I won't cheat on her, that I won't cheat on my wife someday. And I remember saying to one young man, for example, I said, well, what about the girlfriend you're with now? How long have you been with her? I think you've been with her for about 2 years. And I said, do you love her? Oh, absolutely. Could you see yourself marrying her? Yep. You know what? I think she could be the one.
Got to jump in here. Eric Anderson's new book is called The Monogamy Gap, Men, Love, and the Reality of Cheating. Eric, thank you so much for spending the hour with us.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate it.
Today's show was engineered by Shelley Canavy. Joe Bellotti answers the phones. Christine McConnell produces the podcast. And our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about Think, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcast at kera.org/think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.